right, so hello and welcome to another episode of One More Song. We're back again, and I can't imagine all of our fan are still listening, but...
Greg.
You know, great, Steve.
Steve.
Steve, Greg. So we're back again, and we have many things to talk about.
Oh, many wonderful, beautiful things.
I want to first start off by saying that I want to tell, I guess it's not really a story. I started doing this thing where I've never been able to wear beanies properly or whatever. They're all looking kind of goofy. And
the older you get, you can't.
Wear beanies. I have to admit that, let's see here, when was this? Last summer, it's like a year and a half ago or so.
Okay.
I went to a lake in California with Kaylee's parents for a couple days.
Yeah.
And all the kids there, it's a Christian summer camp, but they also they also have cabins.
Like primitive camping as well.
Cabins
as
and things. Like you
a
can,
facility, yeah.
Like people also cabin. People also camp and they, people cabin. But anyway, I say all this to say that a bunch of the kids were there while we were there. And so all the, I think like middle schoolers slash early high schoolers, maybe they were high schoolers. But they all, the cool thing in for high school Southern California kids is to wear their beanies this way. Or I don't like, I saw them wearing their beanies a certain way. And while they look like a bunch of punks, I thought they also looked really cool.
Is it the exposed forehead?
It's not a thing like yeah, you kind of pull it back a little bit. And so, yeah, it's the exposed forehead type thing.
Yeah,
I guess
see,
that's a good way.
I thought I figured that out because that's how I've been wearing it when I get to work because I need a little bit of my shorter hair. I don't have bangs, but I need a little bit of my hair to protrude out because I don't want people thinking that I am like bald
that you're already bald
yeah or something like that, and because I'm the horribly awkward human being I am, I worry about things like that, what perfect strangers are thinking about me.
I do that in the mornings now. In the winter time I get to wear a jacket that has a hood.
Yeah.
And so now I can put my hood up when I leave in the morning and the drive there flattens my hair.
Oh yeah.
And it's amazing, except now I figured out that where the hood goes, it leaves a little bit. Like, right at the hairline is where the hood goes, and my hair comes down a little bit past that. So then I took my hood off the other day. Well, there's a poof slash a little, just a line, just a crease that goes right over the top. So now I've got that problem that I didn't think was a problem before.
No, it's the same to me. My hair frizzes out if there's any sort of humidity in the air whatsoever. And so when I used to go running when I first got into work super early. I'd go to the gym and work out, but now I go at, like, 11 in the morning. So all through the morning, I've just decided not to fight my hair.
I didn't realize that you weren't doing the 4 a.m. gym thing anymore.
I still go there, but it's just I couldn't keep it up with it getting colder and
everything. What time are you getting up now?
Still 4 a.m. Yeah, I had...
I thought you were pushing it back to like 6.
I did. I tried. I
you
got
can't
it,
do it anymore?
I got it down to like 5:45, and I was okay with that.
So what happened? What happened that you reverted back to 4?
It was literally just a progressive thing of... You know, if I woke up 10 minutes earlier, I think I could beat this much traffic. Then it's like, I'm not waking up at 4 a.m. again. No, not doing that ever again. But I don't think I can stand 6:30 anymore. So I'll compromise with 5:45. And then it just slowly started working its way backwards. It's like a glacier. It just slowly worked its way backwards, moving along. And now I'm just right back where I started.
You really got all the way back to 4 o'clock?
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far. It's 4:10.
You wouldn't go 4 o'clock.
Hey, let's
not get extreme about this, okay? 4:10.
Hey man, you do what you got to do, and I mean,
grief.
I hate traffic more than I will ever hate waking up early because that's at least something I have control over. But if there is, so basically, it reached the point that I just got completely fed up with dealing with my hair in the morning. So now I get my shower at night, I go to bed, and then I wake up the next morning, and I just let my hair do whatever it wants when I'm at work. And
your hair is short enough that I think you can still kind of do that.
Yeah, but when it gets to like where it is now, like I'm getting a haircut tomorrow.
I was saying, it's like right at that point where it can start to actually do stuff.
Exactly.
As opposed to just sit there.
Yeah. And so it's usually whenever I go to the gym and do my stuff at 11, that's when I get my shower, and I always wear my baseball cap when I get back. So I'm sitting there at my desk in the middle of this corporate office with my black baseball cap on for like 20 minutes, and nobody's ever said anything, but I just know if
in the middle of the day?
Yeah. And it's just like, for 20 minutes, I'll sit there with a baseball cap on, and I'll just be like, no, you don't understand. I have to give myself hat hair on purpose so that it just stays down. And
do you
manageable.
Not get the crease? Like
no, I do. No, that's the hilarious part. When my hair is this long, I just get like this. It goes down the back of my head, then all of a sudden
there's
this
the
little
indent
valley.
Right,
indent. It's hilarious to feel. It seems like, oh, wow, it's like I almost did that on purpose. But it's funny because another of my coworkers, like an older lady, comes over and says, I don't know what it is you have been doing with your hair lately, Alex, but it's very modern looking. It's very cool looking. And I'm like, really?
Modern? Yeah, yes, I put creases in my hair.
Or it's a new style called wet hair when going to bed. It's like, that's the thing it's always they've always said about this, is that we, the Macintoshes have really nice hair. The Macintosh boys have really nice hair. I remember Aaron Buckman saying that to me one time.
Do you want to turn off your screensaver?
That's
so
probably
that we can
a good
actually
idea, yeah.
Make this. Okay, so while you're doing that, it's going to keep recording, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So while you're while you're doing that, the reason why I mentioned the beanie thing is that before that, so I guess the April before that, Kaylee and I had gone to we had done our Dakota's Minnesota trip that we did. That I think did you stay yeah. with the dog that weekend or did we have the dog
if
yet?
You were,
I don't think we did, actually. I don't think we did.
But you had Diesel, so.
Never mind. That was like 2 years ago then.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I bought this beanie that I'm wearing now, the South Dakota State University Jackrabbits one.
Right.
It has the huge – I loved it because it just has this huge jackrabbit on it.
And people – you're just waiting for people to ask you about it.
Oh, no. I don't care if people ask me about it. I don't give a crap. They can ask or not ask. I just love that it just has this ginormous jackrabbit on it. So – I couldn't figure out when I first got it, I couldn't figure out how to wear it to where I thought it worked, to where it looked okay.
Wear it well, yeah.
Right. And then I went to California and figured out I can mimic all the cool Southern California high school kids and sort of pull it back a little bit.
Right.
And I can look like a butthead, but at the same time, I can still, in my mind, I can make it work.
Yeah. It's like you're trying to fool people into thinking you have a whole nest of dreads.
A perfect example. That's it. A perfect example, yeah, is how the Rastas.
Yeah.
Where
that's exactly what I've thought of, yeah.
Like that, just without the big poof of dreads yeah. behind it. That's perfect. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I take my beanie and I used to put one little fold over it around the top. Now if I unfold it, I get that enough purchase
you
in that.
You can pull
that
it back.
Yeah.
So that, yep.
And I thought I'd made that up on my own, I guess.
Well, you did. You and...
yeah, as we have figured out, I guess, after the last few episodes, I have a very bad habit of figuring out things and stealing things that I have never even heard before.
Or it's impressive.
Before, so, yeah.
It kind of lends itself to the whole universal consciousness thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you ever... Okay, so Laura talked about Waking Life. Do you ever watch Waking Life?
I know of it. Richard Linklater, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen it, no.
Right. Wait, he did that movie?
I think that was Linklater, yeah.
He did. Okay, oh, we're going to get on another tangent here.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Okay, well, let's go down that road then. Fine. Fine. Fine.
Dude, the album we are talking about today is short enough that we can afford a few tangents.
Oh, that's true. I guess we've been listening to hour-long albums and stuff, yeah. And the one today is 32 minutes, which also, hilariously enough, another tangent. I thought when I was upstairs before we started recording, I thought it would be really funny to come down here and be like, okay, so welcome to another episode. I've decided that we're going to do a real Power Hour today. So prepare yourself, but yeah.
One of these times, that'll be a special edition, special episode. It's the Christmas special. Tonight on a very special One More Song.
The boys enjoy many, many Christmas beverages and see where the fun takes them.
Come join the boys for an hour of merriment.
I'm looking for the guys.
Hey, excuse me.
Okay, I didn't realize that was still him. Okay, so a couple months ago, well, I'm awful at getting started with stories. One of my favorite movies is not up on the wall there. It's called Lost in Translation. You're familiar with that, right?
Yeah, you have. Yeah.
Okay, so I Googled it once because I couldn't figure out... There's a certain aspect of that movie that I like that I couldn't figure out what it was, but I Googled it, just movies similar to Lost in Translation, to see if other people... If I could find some random message board where people were like, movies based on this aspect of it.
Yeah.
Well, I ended up coming across something called Before Sunrise. Have you heard of that before?
I have heard of that trilogy. I've been meaning to sit down and watch it at some point because it's apparently...
I didn't know it was a trilogy at all. I just saw that whatever. So I had a text document with that on. It just said Before Sunrise. And I finally got around to watching it last weekend.
Oh, man, you're already a step ahead of me.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
So I went. It ended... exactly as I wanted it to end. I mean, just not that this is clearly not a movie podcast, but I'm gonna talk movies for a second. Ended perfectly, exactly what I wanted. And so I went and started reading about it on Wikipedia, and that's when I found out, oh, there's another one.
Yep.
Called Before Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third one.
It just came out last year.
Right. Called Before Midnight.
Yeah.
And so, well, I'm not a movie person. You know I'm not a movie person. Mm-hmm. I watched all three movies in a day.
Seriously?
Because it was just so good.
Yeah.
So I turned on the second one. It was only 80 minutes long. It's amazing.
Jeez.
I was like, well, all right, I guess I got to watch the third one now. The third one, I think they took a little far. I think they pushed it a little bit. Mm. But, yeah, I say that to say watch it. Watch them. It's really good. I'm never going to look at Ethan Hawke the same way again.
With all due respect, an endorsement from you, that's an endorsement for quality. Because it's just saying somebody who's not into movies is into something.
Yeah, but think about the movies that I like, not for comedy's sake, but for like whatever.
I'm not saying you don't like quality movies.
Well, no, but I have you have to be in the right mood to like this type
of
stuff.
Exactly.
Like, I can say, go watch Back to the Future. But that's a different aspect of me liking movies than me say, go watch Sideways and Vanilla Sky and whatever. So, but if you're feeling nostalgic, if you're feeling whatever, and you like that aspect of Lost in Translation, what I like about Lost in Translation is that it's sort of a two people coming together at the same time, like, what's it, randomly? Randomly, I guess. They're in the same place at the same time, and they have like a temporary connection, and then they just kind of split, and they go their own ways, and it's just sort of the leave it open-ended.
Yeah. And that is exactly what those first two Before movies are about.
That's exactly...
Two people just coming together for one evening.
I could not get over how perfect those were. It was exactly what I was looking for. Yeah. So... how the heck do we get on that topic?
I was just gonna say one more. I was just gonna say one more thing. That's how perfectly in Lost in Translation. That's how they perfectly create that feeling by letting the story and the movie bleed over the edges of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bill Murray talking to his wife on the phone, or the facts that she receives
at the end,
where it's just like stuff that you know is going to carry on after the movie ends.
Well, it's sort of, it's little hints of here's real life that is still waiting for you, or that's going to come back or whatever.
Right.
And then you got the whole part at the end where you don't know what Bill Murray says to her, and they even purposefully don't make it known what he says to her.
Yeah.
How the heck did we get talking about that?
I don't even remember how we got on that.
I don't remember either. I was talking about beanies.
Yeah.
And then, well, anyway, okay, so somehow we got talking about that. I don't remember. Let's see. So what are we talking about today? Since we're doing a music podcast and not a movies podcast.
We're finally getting around to one of your favorite bands of all time.
I love them. Saves the Day.
And I only really got into them when I moved down here and got access to your CD collection again and started... burning some of your stuff to listen to on my iPod.
I can't believe that you like this stuff, because you were so against this type of stuff.
I was... I don't know what happened. You're right, I'm 10 years late to every party.
I'd rather have you be late than not
like
arrive at all to this party.
I feel like I have to earn everything. I have to understand where something is coming from. So I feel like I had to sample everything to really come around and appreciate what really matters in music. For example, just songwriting, just the basic musical ear for catchy songwriting is something that I just had to earn through going through the metal stage, the jazz stage, the rock stage, the hardcore stuff, all that, just to come back and fully understand what is this common thread that runs through all of them that makes them all succeed.
So are you at the point now that, well, you must be if you're starting to like all this emo stuff from 10 years ago.
Right.
Are you to the point that you now can look beyond the fact that somebody writes an entire album using GCD or whatever, and you can hear how they use that, but they still write really catchy stuff and really catchy riffs and all that?
It's the kind of example why I'm okay with something like The Suffering by Coheed, when the whole big buildup of that song is too one of those progressions that you hear everywhere in pop music. But in a song like that, they earn that. They build up to it with all sorts of different riffage and different ideas happening there, so it feels earned. It feels part of a whole.
So where do you think the difference comes in between earned and we've sold out and just got bored? And do you know what I mean? Like, apparently somebody's home. Where does the earned part come? Like, okay, so you write three albums of really complex stuff, and then on the fourth album, you have a couple songs that are just straightforward, basic chords, nothing complicated.
Kind of like what we can say about Saves the Day today.
How do you distinguish between this was something purposeful where they just wanted to do it, and this was you got bored or lazy or just stopped caring?
I think it's all about taste. I don't know. It's all about what you take out of it, because if anything of this art, it's what you take away from it. Cause
is it just like what type of visceral reaction you get from it?
Yeah, I think so. You could take away your first reaction to Saves the Day's latest album, which was kind of my first reaction, but like I was saying, how it's a very stripped down, straightforward sort of pop rock. Pop rock.
Luckily, none of this stuff actually, from listening and editing the last episode, none of these extra things actually make it onto here. So it's just us sitting here going,
It's a straightforward, just pop rock stuff. There's nothing terribly complicated about it. The song Ring Pop and all of that is just, there's nothing terribly complicated about anything compared to other albums they've done, especially like In Reverie or anything like that. But when like I was mentioning to you earlier, when I saw its context in Saves the Day's discography and the three albums that came before it and everything Chris was going through as he was writing it, to hear where an album like this Orange album fits into it, to realize what an absolute relief this album must have been for him. There is just this joyous feeling, this infectious feeling of just weight lifting off you and just a breezy summer day, something like that, that just permeates that album. So yeah, it is just, you could say it was just something he threw together in a week with the band or something like that, and it's just simple, straightforward music, but there's so much more to it than that. And that's the stuff I feel like I've really come to understand and pick out from stuff and figure out when it is just a cynical cash grab and when it is something that genuinely has more to it that you need to understand. But
so what did you finally gotten past the, it needs to have something to sell itself and something to prove that it's quality stuff in terms of technical or in terms of complex or whatever, and you can now just appreciate it for what it is?
I still think you need, like any art, I still think you need something that the listener or the viewer can take away from it. You know, and that's, again, that's the...
But I mean, so what, yeah, exactly. But what I'm saying is you've now added this visceral reaction to it. Like, you've allowed yourself to appreciate or interpret stuff. Hold on.
Kaylee! Shut the door.
Answer the phone.
Answer the phone!
So you've basically allowed yourself to be able to appreciate a song for what it is, even if it's not complex, even if it's not whatever, but if it's able to invoke some kind of emotion, like you can feel that there is some kind of emotion put into it and it's not just thrown out there.
Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to mention to you that I've been thinking about for the last few weeks, because I think we texted about this one day, was when I tried to listen to Colors again. And yeah, for the umpteenth time.
I've been trying to make you listen to that album for years.
Well, I finally like...
We're talking about Between the Buried and Me's third.
You got me. You know more of their discography than I do.
I only know that album.
And I just, I couldn't escape the feeling. I couldn't put it into words exactly, but it finally came to the point I could finally qualify it, put it into terms, and I realized the music in the album feels like the musical equivalent of a studio apartment. Everything in that album feels like it exists for efficiency reasons. It exists because we're making this type of album, so we just need to strip it down. This part here exists, the screaming part here exists, because that's what's needed in the genre, and it gets you from part to part to part to part without any real honest, like, songwriting or anything, any overlying theme or idea behind it. It's just, for efficiency's sake, we're writing this stuff, and we decide to have this here, this here, this here. Everything is stripped down and clean and tight, and it just exists to get you from one day to the next, one to the next. So
interesting.
That's just my opinion. I don't know what you would think about that, because I know you... It's just, I listen to it because I'm trying to hear what everybody else seems to hear.
Well, right. There are bands, there are several of them. I can only think of one other one right now. But there are bands where they will have an entire career of albums that I just don't get, that just don't connect with me, I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But they will put out one album that is, actually there's two of them, we were just talking about one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are, but they will put out one album that I think is amazing. Between the Buried and Me is one of those. Their first couple albums are awful. Their stuff after Colors is awful. But for some reason, I don't know what happened, but at some point, I connected with Colors and just really, really got into it. I don't know what it is about that. But another band, which if I can get you to listen to it and get into it the way that I got into it, we could talk about on here. Or even if you don't like it, it might be good to have differing opinions. But... this band Hot Rod Circuit has an album called Sorry About Tomorrow that is incredibly amazing, and the rest of their stuff just doesn't quite, it misses the mark with me. It's the same type of stuff, but it just misses the mark. And same way with Death Cab for Cutie, because we were just talking about them. I just noticed that up there. That Transatlanticism album is unbelievable to me, but the rest of their music I just can't stand. Yeah. It's atrocious.
Well, a lot of the reviews I said that was the same reaction a lot of people had to their that album.
So
one of the best albums of the decade or something like that.
So I get not being able to get into it if that doesn't happen to be an album that seems different from the other ones.
It was just so hard to listen to something like, what is it, Son of Nothing?
Yeah.
Listen to something like that where it's just... screaming part, okay, we need a clean part here, okay, we need this part, and then it just doesn't feel like there is anything keeping anything together. And then to go and listen to something like Reach Beyond the Sun, which is just hook after hook after hook, and there's just how they keep this, like...
Well, let's see if I can get a little bit of Son of Nothing here, since we have this. This is live. You're right, it's just kind of... It's Lilu Dallas, basically.
Yeah, this is what we need here, so here's what it is.
Okay, so... please skip around. Sorry.
Like,
I see what you're talking about there. Like, there's no kind of transitions or whatever. It's just kind of part A, part B.
And not necessarily Beatles transitions, like we were saying. It's just like part, 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 part. No real whole or overlying connection to
any
of it. You
said, as opposed to this Reach Beyond the Sun, you mean the song itself? Or
The album, so you can start it. Yeah, even.
Okay, so Shai Hulud's latest album.
Yeah.
There we go.
Where will this latest spirit? And all
Yeah, this album is much more punk than their other stuff, but it's at least... I see what you're talking... There's definitely a difference.
Like, this... There's just this hookiness to it. This right here. Here. Like, I have found myself walking down the hall of my work, sitting there going... That's enough to stick in my head. That's catchy enough, and yet it still is unmistakably them.
So you could theoretically classify those in the same genre, but they're two very distinctive sounds. One of them you can connect with sort of a... So you basically have just learned to appreciate the riff, the catchy riff.
Yeah, the art of the riff, absolutely, yeah. And, you know... People have known that for years, you know, Back in Black, Smoke on the Water, you know, it's this stuff all over again.
Hails Bales.
Yeah. And if there's one band that was great at writing catchy and riffs,
I was watching. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Chris Connolly is incredibly amazing.
How he
at
has
doing
kept
that.
This up over so many albums, I have no idea.
I was watching No Country for Old Men the other day, and there's a part in there where they come into. You've seen that movie, right?
That's one of my favorite.
Okay, right, where they come and they discover the cops discover the shootout scene at first or whatever.
Yeah,
The cops come in and he goes, Hails Bales, they even shot the dog. Ever since I was reminded of that, it's like going, Hails Bales.
First one, that's a dead dog. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Oscar winning screenwriting right there.
So, yeah, now that we're talking about emo pop punk stuff today and we've already blasted people's ears out with yelly music for a couple minutes.
Now
so
to the album you actually came to hear.
We really need to learn, at least I need to learn, how to keep things together. Okay, so before we do that, you don't watch a lot of TV, but when you're here, or does Sushma have TV?
We're usually watching other stuff.
Okay, but you guys aren't just, like, watching cable or whatever?
Not really. We've watched Jeopardy time to time, but yeah.
Why I'm asking is because have you seen, at some point, I think it's been years that they've been doing this, the Sonic commercials with the two guys that are in the car or whatever?
Oh, yeah, I know those.
There's this latest one that, I mean, cracks me up every time. I think it's, like, leaps and bounds above humor-wise previous ones. I love all the other ones.
Okay.
But I wanted to play it in case you haven't seen it. So let's see if we can get this thing going here.
These boneless chicken wings are great.
Yeah, I know. And I finally found myself a wingman.
You're going to use the wing as your wingman?
Yeah, for the ladies.
How is that going to help you at all?
It's going to make me irresistible.
Oh, right. Yeah, going to give you that certain je ne sais quoi.
Jenna said what?
Jenna.
Did she mention me by name, or was it just kind of like, was she just talking in general?
I said je ne sais quoi.
I know, but what did she say?
Be a wingman.
Dude, that cracks me up. Every time it got that je ne sais quoi. Jenna said what? But I love the part where he's like, was she talking about me or was she just kind of talking?
For some reason, that reminded me of that little comic that was on online with the rabbit talking to the tortoise, and the tortoise is like putting its head in its shell, and he's like, I'm an introvert. I don't need people. I'm just fine by myself. And the rabbit's like, really? And the tortoise sticks his head out and it's like, why? Do you know someone? Did someone say something about me?
I know, but what did she say? All right, so this is talking about this album is going to be ridiculous.
So
today.
What is this album, and why are we listening to it again?
This album is, as we've said, by the band Saves the Day. It's from 99. It's called Through Being Cool.
And it is the 15th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken.
That's why we're doing it. Last week, whenever the second was, I think, is when it came out 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I saw something in passing this week that said it was its 15th anniversary, so I thought, well, we might as well go over this and do it. We've been talking about doing it for a while.
Do you remember when it came out?
November 2nd, 99, I think.
Well, do you remember where you were? Were you present at its...
Remember when I went aware up, of it? Remember when before we were recording, I went upstairs to go grab something and you thought I was grabbing mail?
Yeah. No.
I saved my cassette tape where I first heard about Saves the Day.
No.
It's an Equal Vision Y2K tour sampler. And I got this at the Cave.
Oh, wow, the Cave, yeah.
when I went to see a show there in March of 2000. And I remember the table where I picked this up and all that. But yeah, I've saved this ever since. And it's got...
this ought to be good. Get ready, folks. This is the set list for the rest of our season here.
So it's got Saves the Day. The first song I ever heard was Rock's Tonic Juice Magic.
There are worse songs.
And then another song that I actually don't even know that I'm familiar with, Houses and Billboards.
Ooh.
Which might be a B-side or something of this. I'm familiar with a lot of their stuff, and I've never heard that before.
Was it on Can't Slow Down?
No. Okay. No, it's definitely not. I don't... but yeah, that's what I went to grab, was because I've had this saved over the years, and it's got a band called The Strider. I don't know. One King Down.
Oh, there we go.
Bane.
Okay, now you're talking.
Boy Sets Fire.
Yeah, I know those.
So it's just a bunch of hardcore bands, and then Saves the Day. And I remember... emo hadn't become a thing yet when I first got into these guys. So Saves the Day, through being cool, Saves the Day, was still being classified as hardcore. People were talking about it like it was equivalent to One King Down.
This album is produced very similar to something like Profound Hatred of Man. I was listening to that the other week.
You think so?
Yeah, it sounds very similar production-wise, because as we talked about on the trip back from California, back around this time, they still didn't quite know how to produce this kind of music. So I think I can see why these two, I can see why they would like lump them together like that. Yeah, because you put Saves the Day and Bane on the same mixtape together.
Right, and One King Down.
Yeah.
Just like, what the heck you people... And they were on a hardcore label, Equal Vision, at the time, at least. I mean, Equal Vision has kind of gone the way of the dodo as far as sticking to its hardcore roots. But, that's where I first heard about them, was I picked up this Equal Vision record sampler in March of 2000, like 5 months after Through Being Cool came out.
Equal Vision signed Saves the Day, and it just all went downhill from there. You know, they were the Silverstein of their day. They were Silverstein to their Trust Kill, or who was it?
Hey, if you need to get a hold of Equal Vision Records, according to this cassette tape...
Do they have a website on the worldwide interwebs?
They do, equalvision.com, which they actually still run. That's actually still legit. But you can call them at 1-888-EVR-EDGE. So anyway, yeah, that's why. It's something that the longer that I've kept it, the more significant it's become to me. So
Equal Vision Records, call us. Let's cut a deal. Cha-ching.
But I view... Okay, so depending on how you want to get into the history of the whole emo movement and whatever, you can take it back to like the late 80s stuff when you start getting into stuff like Fugazi and that type of stuff. But there was sort of a first wave towards emo, which had this Say Anything band.
Yeah. They've been around for a long time.
We're going to see Saves the Day in a couple weeks play Through Being Cool in its entirety.
That's right, yeah. Forgot about that, yeah.
And they are opening for Say Anything, which I've never been able to get into, so I have no interest in sticking around for them. I don't care. Doesn't matter. But anyway, they were sort of the first wave of pressing towards this emo sort of thing. And then... The hardcore scene of like One King Down and Chilude and all that stuff happened in the mid to late 90s, and Saves the Day came out of that.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, we were talking about earlier, their first album, Can't Slow Down, is very punk in sound.
Yeah.
It's very hardcore in sound.
I couldn't really get any riffage out of that or get anything hooky.
But
out of it.
I view Through Being Cool as the seminal album that started the emo movement, at least during the time that I was huge into it in the early 2000s. Because it really, this is a major shift from Can't Slow Down.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why it's so significant to me, is that I think it really started the popularity of this type of stuff. Yeah. Like, Chris Connelly's lyrics are so just blunt and to the point.
And he phrases them so weirdly. I was listening to something the other day and looking over it. it's phrased in such a way that he will just cut off a sentence and start a phrase on a word right in the middle of the sentence. And we'll see examples of it when we listen to it, but yeah, it's very much, he's still being influenced by that train of thought punk sound.
Right, and you can hear it coming back even through his later stuff from time to time. And it's funny, on this album you can hear it too, because it starts off with a fast sort of punk song.
Yeah.
It's a minute and a half long. And then it goes right into, and it just kind of progressively gets into more of the emo stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the last couple songs goes right back into sort of fast punk, just stuff. So, but this is going to be very interesting to talk about, because like we were talking about, it's 30-something minutes long. There are 12 songs. I don't know how the heck, if we thought the other stuff was Power Hour-esque, this is going to be very interesting.
An average length of about 3 minutes a song.
So, yeah, I guess we can get the ball rolling with this if you want.
Absolutely.
Did we talk about where you, how did you first hear about them? Where was I? I remember you asking about going through the CDs.
Yeah,
anyway,
when I came down here, when I moved back down here and got access to your CD collection to put on my iPod, because I still had an iPod 2 years ago, and I still have an iPod today, and I'm not changing that.
Oh, but you grabbed these?
Yeah, I was stuck in the basement of Chuck Levin's, and they had a little dock there with speakers that people could put their iPods and listen to, and so I just figured I'd listen to something just to kill time, and I thought I'd work my way through this band. And so I just remember Can't Slow Down was not that memorable. This stuck with me with certain things, particularly You Vandal, which we'll come up to. But I just remember that Stay What You Are was the album that really solidified it for me. So while you say this is the seminal album, and I will give that to you because you've been listening to them a lot longer than I have, Stay What You Are was the album that really got me into it, as I think a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree.
Because when they change albums, it's not like Coheed, where when you listen to their albums that take maybe like a year or two between them now, you can clearly tell when there's stuff that they're improving on, where they're doing something different, but you can still feel the threads between what they're working through. With these guys, they almost reinvent themselves every album. The sound is so different between albums.
Except from this album to Stay What You Are.
Yeah, Stay What You Are is more like a better produced.
I think that you can see
this.
A very clear connection from this going into that one.
Yeah,
but you're right. Not counting those two things, absolutely. Yeah. It's just on its own. Like, this is what he was feeling right now at that point.
Yeah. People were saying that Stay What You Are is when they got into a little more complex guitar writing, a little more complex songwriting in parts. But there's still complex stuff going on in this album. It's just not produced in the same way, so you can't really hear it.
I'm probably playing it wrong, too, but you saw me trying to play that riff upstairs that's annoying. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's right. We'll hear some version of it in here.
Yeah.
But that is annoying to play when I'm really trying to concentrate. I can't imagine some like 17-year-old trying to play that.
Yeah.
So before we start this, getting into sort of a little bit of the history of this, I read, as I told you, I read a Wired article about Through Being Cool, whatever. But they wrote Can't Slow Down when they were in high school. So that's in high school.
Yeah.
And then they graduated, and Chris and one other guy went to NYU, New York University,
mm-hmm.
and they wrote this album on weekends.
Nice.
And things when they went to New Jersey, to a studio in New Jersey to write and record this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to hear them. They were like, he's talking in this article about how he's sitting in class writing out lyrics and writing out riffs and stuff. So it's interesting to think that this album, which is so seminal in so many ways, both lyrically and sort of musically for the movement, was written while he was in like Psych 101, basically.
You can definitely hear it on certain tracks.
Have you noticed how his voice sounds completely different on some songs? Like, he's got his normal sort of high-pitched whatever, but then some songs, it doesn't even sound... It sounds like him when he's, like, 60 or something. I'll point it out.
Okay, yeah, because I really haven't heard... I think in such overall concept ways that I just hear, this is the Through Being Cool voice he had then. Okay, here's
the... Oh, but even on the album, I mean, it changes.
Oh, yeah, I know, but that's what I mean, is that I think so big picture
that I don't really hear
those individual differences on vocals, so...
Basically, I'm trying to get a lot of the main concepts out of the way here because it's... We're going to be running through this stuff so quickly.
Well, it's really interesting you said that about NYU, just as one final cap on that, because an overall theme of the album does seem to be distance and traveling a lot. Certain, like, shoulder to the wheel and some of these. So a lot of it feels like he is writing this stuff, thinking about the distance being traversed, maybe going back and forth between...
So you can hear stuff about him writing, talking about actually being on tour and driving.
Exactly.
You know, shoulder to the wheel, the vast spoils of America.
Yeah.
So boy, this is going to test our skills of power hour edge. But you want to give it a go?
Let's do it.
All right. Hopefully this works. All right. The first song is called All Star Me. It's a minute and a half long. And this is Through Being Cool. The album's called Through Being Cool by Saves the Day from 99.
Make album go now.
Make album go now.
Oh, right. We're supposed to talk over this.
I think, like, you start out the album with the sound of Can't Slow Down and the same lyrical content. But, you know, like we were talking about, his lyrics are just so blunt. Like, this wasn't the way we planned. I wasn't supposed to get to forget your taste. I mean, just it's very he kind of very easily lays it all out there.
Yeah.
And I like how a lot of their stuff. Oh, like that right there. He refers to himself in the third person a lot, like he's talking to himself.
Chris, I said, I was wondering that. It's like, oh no, he's turning into Claudio.
Except I think he purposefully does it.
Yeah, this time. Probably.
What is coal of coal that starches within me?
There you go. Honestly, I couldn't even tell that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
Once again, like I'm saying, the phrasing is so odd. I can't. Yeah.
I don't know what a coal of core of coal. What? That's
Well, I like how the song before it ends here kicks off with a sound that musicians will, you and I will very clearly know what that sound is. That it kicks off with that very distinct sound of plugging in a live cable into a guitar,
like I was doing earlier. Yeah. Okay, so that's song one, track two. You Vandal. Oh, I have so many embarrassing stories from this album.
This might be my favorite song.
This is one of the first songs I learned how to play from this album.
Yeah.
I love it.
One of the this is like the hookiest chorus of all time.
So I had a girl that I was sort of dating a little bit at the time that this came out who lived in New Jersey. So I remember writing her all these stupid, embarrassing things, like sending her this song, just being like, when can I wake up next to you? Okay, so here's the chorus. My spleen is dripping from my pants.
Dude. Sushma is from New Jersey.
I
played this song for her, and she was like, that's not medically possible. A spleen dripping from your pants, that's not possible. It's like, the song is ridiculous.
It's like Kaylee. Excuse me, that's not exactly correct.
Dude, there's so many covers of this song. You saw the face palm Picard meme that I made when I found out that August Burns Red was doing a cover of this, and like Dustin was online looking for tabs for it, and like, anybody got tabs for You Vandal? It's like, oh, come on.
It's like, you can just get a basic
you can get a pretty basic idea from this.
Right, there's not a lot of complicated riffs that need to be added.
One more time. Good luck getting that out of your head.
Yeah, so embarrassing to write stuff to a girl who I've never spent the night with. I barely went on dates with, and I'm like, when can I wake up next to you? I woke up with the smell of New Jersey. It's like, what? You're just trying too hard.
You just sign it with sign your letters with your name and then a lyric underneath it. So yep. Did the same thing, dude.
All right, shoulder to the wheel.
They still play this live, don't they?
Mm-hmm. They play all these live. This is one of those sort of the lyrical thing that you're talking about where he's just writing. And I say go, just go, please, Dave, just drive.
Listen to this chorus. When the chorus comes up and how weird it is. When you see the lyrics in front of you, it makes sense. But how
when
he's
you're listening,
saying them.
Right, when you're listening to it, you're like, I don't understand. Yeah. It's like you almost have to write it out to figure out what he's saying.
Like, usually you should end your
sentence. Oh, here, this part here. I didn't mean to yell, I'm having a bad week and I miss my mom. Yeah. For years before they had lyrics out, I did not know what that second to last line.
Yeah.
The radio is playing Queen. I thought it was like, the radio is plain and clean or something. It's like, I don't know what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, he ends one of the phrases there on the word is.
Oh, out here where silence is?
Yeah. Oh, no, the world is flying by is.
But, yeah, we drive Dave's steps on the gas. The world is flying by is slick and smooth. Big waves of light. The radio is playing Queen. He's creating an image in your head of him just driving.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
When you know what he's saying, it's incredible. It's just hard to discern. I understood the radio is playing Queen. I'm like, okay, I understood that. Yes, I do hug out to Queen.
Right. By the time you figure out the radio is playing Queen, you've probably either listened to this recently for the first time or you've been listening to it for 10 years and you're like, wait, it's not something about playing clean? Like clean music?
We're playing clean. Right. Is that like Rolling in the Deep playing clean?
Yeah, we should do an Adele day.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
So... a bending ending, also a b ending.
I hurt my head on that one. Do you like that part? He nails the lyrics at that.
It's so weird to think that I know lots of bands do this, but you're 17, 18, and you're just like, here's a van with your buddies and a big trailer. Just go drive around the country.
I remember driving our Taurus between Smithburg High School and Washington Technical School every morning and having like three or four guys with me in that thing going there and that road up to 70 from Smithburg and just having like feelings like this of just blitzing through the road there with these guys, because when you have all those people with you, all your friends with you, it's a completely different vibe.
Right, it's a great road trip song.
He catches it perfectly on that.
Alright, Rock's Tonic Juice Magic, the first Save the Day song I ever heard from this little tape. Let me take this awkward saw, run it against your thighs, cut some flesh away, carry this piece of you with me, so I can say tonight. How the heck does he get away with writing this type of stuff and not having people think it's creepy or whatever? There's just a way he presents it, I think.
I guess kind of like my colors argument, where it's just, you can separate yourself from it and say, no, I'm just writing this because it's a genre thing. It's just what you write about in, like, this emerging genre of emo, so I don't actually mean it.
Right, let me take this awkward saw and run it against your thighs, cut some flesh away, I'll carry this piece of you with me. Like, you can get what he's saying in the whole scheme of things, but it's just like, that's more Cannibal Corpse lyrics.
Kind of funny how... This is a band that last year released an album with lyrics like, our love is in the in-between.
Right. Or, it's like,
the love you long to know is within. Same band, well.
Oh, like that. I was singing this song and playing it last night, when Kaylee was in the room, and I felt so stupid being like, heart is on the floor, why don't you step on it? I was like, ugh, I gotta stop trying to do this. Okay, so this next line, remember embarrassing stuff? I'll tell you about this in a second. I remember in 10th grade in my Algebra 2 class, I was, let's see if I can tell the story quick. I was sitting next to a girl that I liked, and I was into these guys at the time. I had just gotten this album, and you know how you put the paper bag covers on your books and then you write stuff? I remember taking either her book or her folder for some reason and writing out this Boardwalks and Breaking Waves made our... And I included the I'd buy you lemonade right now and throw it in your face. And I was just like, they're cute lyrics. And then like I think about it now and it's just one of those cringeworthy moments where it's like, what am I trying to accomplish with this?
Right at the time.
But this is good. I mean, you and I are like when fire and the ocean floor collides. It's a good analogy, I think, or good whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's very similar kind of to what he says during the My Sweet Fracture but ending.
I was just going to say, this is a but ending, right?
There's, yeah. It's
a but ending, in a way. So, from that song on my tape, I was like, well, I have to listen to these guys now.
Dude, heart is on the floor. Why don't you step on it? That's not medically possible.
I'm sorry, you can't drip your spleen from your pants. All right, Hollyhocks, Forget Me Not.
Again, I just saw them on this that Warped Tour.
Oh, yeah.
I think then they're playing, this is one of those two songs that they're still playing.
We're going to see the whole album in a couple a couple weeks.
I need sound. Just hit all the strings open.
It's so catchy.
Oh, yeah. That is such a simple lick. That's such a simple hook.
Right. And yet, it just, and it's basically the riff for the whole song.
Yeah.
And yet, it's catchy for the whole song.
Right.
Oh, more embarrassing stuff. Oh, God. I'm telling you, this whole album is just embarrassing stuff. I'll tell you in a second.
Parentheses will name this album Therapy Session 2.
Oh. This is so awful. Okay, so I remember being in our dining room at our place in Hagerstown when I was liking these guys, obviously, at first. And I was like, I had the booklet with me.
Okay, right. Oh, sorry. 1 second. Right there. He finished the phrase two words into his next sentence.
What is it?
Fly out to Montana. It's quiet. Way out past the electric lines.
Oh, yeah. I love that little part right there also.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the riff that I was trying to play earlier.
Yeah, this is catchy. This is head bobbing.
See, I was right. You hear the right ear guitar? You hear the right ear?
Yeah, we were trying to play different.
You were playing the left ear. You were thinking the left ear. I was playing the right ear.
Yeah.
But I was, I remember taking this song specifically, I had the booklet, and anyway, I remember showing Mom these lyrics, and I was like, look at this, Mom, these are lyrics that I'm really into. Like, you know,
you seriously tried to explain yourself?
Well, I was like, look at this, Mom, read this song, basically. And she got done, and for whatever reason, I was expecting her to be like, I get it. I see what you're talking about now. And she read it, and she was just like, this is just sad.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not the point I was trying to get across. Not, no. No, this is not just sad. So, wow, that song ended really quick. All right, so next up, we have Third Engine. I hope we're not peaking a lot of this stuff.
I think we're doing fine. I think stuff like this is why they get lumped in with hardcore. Mm-hmm.
because if you put dirty vocals over this, at least over that opening riff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You could make it work, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can understand where they came from. This, now I want to do that.
This song has... This song has... They do something near the end of this where if you've ever had an amplifier, a guitar amp you're playing in, and has a spring reverb, and you hit it or kick
it
or something,
you're talking about.
And it makes that reverberating sound, they work that into this song, and it sounds awesome.
Oh, I've never even noticed that.
Yeah, I'll point that out when you get to it.
Let's see, where are we here?
Melon and Orange.
Is it all right that every pool of water reminds me of you? Just, ugh. Oh, I like this part coming up here. It's kind of cool. Let's see, where is it?
There really is an overlying theme of this album, isn't it?
It's a traveling thing.
Yeah.
It's a distance. You're right. It's a distance. Whether it's a distance from traveling around the country touring to a distance to like a long distance relationship thing to a just overall feeling lost kind of thing, or like,
yeah, it's like, oh, through being cool, trying to look cool. Is that all right with you? I think I look cool.
Well, right. And like, there's this whole thing on that Wired. Well, here. Yeah. I like the breathing seemed a little easier when we went 100 miles apart. The person across from me sitting in a train seat reminded me of you. So it's interesting. 17 years old, everything seemed a little easier when we weren't 100 miles apart.
Yeah.
Like, when you're 17, yeah, that's absolutely a huge distance.
Yeah.
Like, you remember my girlfriend in college, or in high school, when she went to school in Pennsylvania.
Harrisburg, right?
Lancaster.
Lancaster, yeah.
But that distance was just, like, destruction.
Yeah.
As far as it was. And that wasn't even 100 miles, I don't think, or whatever. But,
oh, here's that sound.
I've never even noticed. I've never noticed that before. But it's stuff like, you know, Kaylee and I did a... good stuff right there.
I just air guitared.
Kaylee and I, we couldn't make, when I was 17, I couldn't make a 60-mile relationship work.
Yeah.
But when I'm 25 or however old I was when Kaylee and I started dating, we did a thing from across the country.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, I don't know. I guess it's maturity, but it's also...
Oh, absolutely.
It's also a... just a how bad you want it thing or whatever. And I guess when you're 17, you don't really quite want it. You don't even know that you want it.
It's from the perspective of somebody who's just beginning to realize the world is bigger
than their town.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, My Sweet Fracture. The song we were talking about. I love me this song. I love me all these songs.
Oh, yeah.
Especially this one.
The ending.
The
we're taking a Klingon. The ending.
More very literal lyrics, or more...
You see, Mom, these are the lyrics I'm into.
Yeah. Why didn't I just show her these? Just a creep and you can't remember the last 5 years. What's so fun if it dissolves in... All right,
see, he was writing about his dentures there.
Yeah, but... He's Bondo. This is good stuff. Like, he does this a lot where he talks in terms of violence or, like, whatever.
And then he talks about his mom. He talks about his relationship with his mom on several songs. It's awesome.
She said, sweetie, you don't... I called my mom last night. She said, sweetie, you don't need someone who's more fleeting than fall.
I'm sure she said that.
Yeah, I'm sure that... 17-year-old Chris Connolly, you don't need someone who's more fleeting than fall. And if she did, 17-year-old Chris Connolly had no idea what she was talking about.
Hang on, son. Hang on, sweetie. I'll get your father to tell you to grow up.
Yeah, and you're right. With the way he phrases this, don't you love those leaves? Don't you wish the orange stayed forever? And cricket sang in the night. That's another one with the... what's the thing that we just talked about?
the phrasing of it and everything.
Yeah, what the other thing? The queen thing.
Oh, the queen. Yeah.
I couldn't figure out the crickets thing for a long time, except I couldn't even come up with something to replace it with. I just didn't know.
Yeah. It's unfortunately one of those situations where I only remember the lyrics that I can easily discern,
right,
and then I'll just
exactly.
kind of make up in my head. It's like, don't be that guy.
So, yeah, and here's the crickets thing.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Ann.
Yeah.
I see what you're talking about. The Ann.
Yeah, yeah.
It's both starting off or ending it in a weird way.
Yep.
And
oh.
up. Is it our
nope. the ending?
The ending. Also, I thought he said these nights for years. It's apparently besides.
Oh.
Another great example in there. Hopefully I'm using that term right. Is it analogy? Let's go over our grammar
okay.
while we're doing this. No.
Yep.
Even 17-year-olds who are in undergrad can write a but ending, and we can't write a but ending.
Oh. See? They get a little heavier each time. So why can't...
I also love how he's singing over it in a way that it just doesn't quite line up with his
yeah.
phrasing.
Yeah.
Now add a little bit more. And yet...
Ian, that's why you and I are not in Saves the Day.
Yeah, when we try to do it, we get you soloing for 4 minutes and wrong notes.